Rising living costs have led 96% of Gen Z and millennials to prioritize affordability over sustainability. Though fast fashion boasts low costs, edited data shows that average prices have increased 9 to 14% year over year. Their inconsistent quality and disposable trends make mass-produced fashion more forgiving on the wallet, but detrimental to the planet. However, with legislative changes looming, how can retailers achieve the lofty sustainability goals laid ahead of them? Welcome to Inside Retail, the podcast brought to you by Edited, the world's leading AI-driven retail intelligence platform. In this podcast, we delve into the current retail landscape, uncovering the opportunities and challenges it's facing, with me, Grace Hill. Despite their hype, plant-based fabrics have struggled to scale, with commercially viable products commanding premium price points. Enter Lenzing, the only global producer that has the technological capability to produce all three generations of wood-based cellulose fibers, such as viscose, modal, and lyocell, on an industrial scale. And with 50% less water impact and CO2 emissions. This unique ability has enabled Lenzing to establish itself as both a technology and a sustainability leader. Lenzing are the first link in the supply chain, but they're also key industry citizens, inspiring and educating the world's largest fashion brands and retailers in their fiber choices. In this episode, we are heading to the start of the process with the Lenzing Group's Senior Commercial Director, Johannes Stefan. We discuss the dilemmas facing retailers over cost, sustainability, and quality to provide customer-centric products, the proposed legislative changes, and how retailers should best navigate them, and how Lenzing plays a key role by doing much more than just supplying fibers. Johannes, thank you so much for joining me. How are you doing?
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for inviting me. I'm doing great.
Brilliant. Well, such a positive response. So I'm glad you're doing so well. So, before we get started, it would be wonderful for you to tell us about your role at Lenzing and what that entails.
Yeah, so my role at Lenzing is Senior Commercial Director. It's a bit of title is not self-explanatory. So what am I doing, or what is Lenzing doing? So Lenzing is a fiber producer, for those of you who don't know. So we are working with a material called cellulose. I can share a bit more on that later on, but my role as a commercial director is practically to take care of all the commercial activities we have in Europe and in America. So I'm working with a great team of marketing experts, of business developers, of salespeople. I have a colleague who calls this educate and inspire. Yeah. So educate and inspire means really we have a product that is not easy to explain. Yeah. It needs a bit of explanation. So our job is a bit to share what are the opportunities with that product? What are the best practices? What can you do with it? What can you achieve with it? And how does it contribute to your strategy? If you're a company in the textile supply chain, or if you're a brand or retailer, or even an end consumer. So that's a bit our job. And I'm taking care of this team of about 40 people. Yeah. And I've been doing this for a couple of years now in different roles. And it's a quick summary of what I'm doing.
And interestingly, I saw before you joined Lenzing that you had a career in consultancy. So what took you down the path of sustainable fibers and materials?
That's a good question, Grace. I've been thinking about that as well for a while now. What was it actually that took me there? And I think there are a couple of things. So if you want to work in the textile business, you have to decide where do you want to work. And I think working at the very beginning as a fiber producer, as a material producer, is a great position, especially when you work for an influential company, especially an influential company in the sustainable fiber world, and also a company that has a relevant scale. Yeah, those three things combined, so scale, sustainability, leadership, also the position in the supply chain, I think that allows you to have an enormously big impact potentially to the world of textiles, much more than if you work for a brand or a retailer, or if you work for an individual company in the supply chain. Yeah, because just to share a bit what the scale means for our company. So we produce around 1 million tons of fibers. What is 1 million tons of fiber? It's a bit hard to grasp 1 million tons of fibers. But if you were to put this fiber into the textile supply chain and produce, say, t-shirts out of this, yeah, and you say, let's make 1 million tons of t-shirts and you sell them for 20 euros each, for example. Yeah, you would come up to a retail revenue of about 100 billion euros. Yeah, so that's about the scale of the company. And there is no textile company in the world, or no apparel company, no fashion company that has that sort of revenue. And that's also the mess that you're influencing as Lenzing. Yeah? And I think I find that quite exciting.
Yeah, Absolutely. And I know that you are such a leader and pioneer in the retail space. Even this week, we were talking to some of our customers and they were talking about how you do work with them and how you have such a huge role in educating them about sustainable choices and fibers and materials in general. So could you tell us a little bit more about what does inspiring and educating your customers? What does that mean?
Yeah, sure. So maybe why are we even speaking to brands and retailers? Yeah, because we're at the very beginning of the supply chain. We don't have any direct business relationships with the brand and retail side. Yeah, so why are we doing that? And I think that the main reason is because, you know, if you think of yourself or your friends or your colleagues or the general public out there, mm-hmm. there's generally a very limited knowledge of raw materials. People don't know much about textile raw materials. Yeah. They know about fashion trends, they know about brands, they know about, you know, where they like to shop fibers, what they like, what they enjoy, what they don't enjoy, but they don't know much about fibers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we need to do a lot of education on the end consumer level. And usually the brand and retail side is a great place to start. They all have their communication outlets, their followership and so on and so forth. So it's great to work with them to educate the market and tell them what choices can be made and why you should do certain choices and avoid certain other choices maybe. Yeah. So our role or our strategy is a bit to work on both ends. The textile supply chain, that's where everything starts, where we are selling our fibers, but also the end of the textile supply chain, meaning the brands, the retailers, mm-hmm. The consumers and so on, because it needs a lot of education, a lot of explanation.
Absolutely. I know I've spoken before about how in my previous role, when I was working in retail head office and working in buying and merchandising, I just did not have the knowledge or the experience to understand the impact of the choices that I was making on the environment and on the industry as a whole. And I think consumers feel extremely confused. And we know that that is something that is spoken about in the data that we see. So could you tell us a little bit about what is Lensing really focusing on at the moment as a pioneer in the industry? What are your focuses?
As I said, Lensing is working with a raw material called cellulose, and we extract that from wood. Yeah, and you have to think about where can innovation and development take place here. Yeah, so it starts by where do you get that cellulose raw material from? And historically, this has always been wood for us, yeah. But there are other sources of raw material cellulose as well. And one of those big areas is textile waste, especially waste that contains cotton as a content, yeah, because that's another source of cellulose. It's just not stuck in a tree, it's stuck in a discarded garment, post-industrial or post-consumer garment. And there are also ways to extract materials or the raw materials that we need out of such a material. And a great part of our research is going into how can we produce the fibers that we've always produced, but how can we change the raw material or adapt the raw materials that we use and go a bit away or add a bit to the wood that we use, also to other materials. And waste textiles is such an element. We've also done trials and developments and products with, for example, a company called Orange Fiber, where we essentially use orange peels also in our production. They also contain cellulose. So practically or theoretically, at least every or there are a lot of raw materials, a lot of fruits, plant-based products and so on that contain cellulose. So a lot of our research is going into that that area.
That's amazing. I think as well, just to hear about the importance of cellulose, the fact that it's so abundant and also it's renewable, and what kind of impact can cellulose have on the industry as a whole as a preferred choice?
If you ask cellulose, so cellulose is a very commonly used raw material, and people, the most known part of that is cotton. Cotton is a cellulose product, right? So cotton, if you have a cotton plant, then maybe 90% or more of that cotton plant is actually cellulose. You have it in a relatively pure form. Yeah. So the cellulose market is very big. It's about 25 to 30 million tons a year, just to give you a feeling for that scale. Yeah. It's a big market, but you need in a textile product or a lot of textile products, you need the functionality of cellulose. Yeah, because it absorbs moisture, it's breathable, it has a lot of characteristics that other fibers simply don't have. So you need that raw material. But if you think about a natural product such as cotton or other products, there are certain limitations to growth for such products. Yeah, because they compete against other crops, or again, they compete for agricultural land and so on and so forth. Yeah, so there are certain limitations. So where we step in as a company or as an industry is, we take cellulose from a different source, but produce a product that has similar characteristics as a naturally grown cellulosic material. So you get that breathability, you get that softness, you get that smoothness, and so on and so forth. But it's produced in a controlled industrial environment.
I know that you've got some kind of very well-known names, which is the end result of that process. Could you share a little bit more about the different products that our listeners may have come across?
Again, if you take cellulose as a raw material, there are many things you can do, many technologies you can work on. You can adjust certain things that nature cannot adjust, right? So for example, you can adjust the length of a fiber. You can adjust the diameter of a fiber. You can adjust the cross-section of a fiber. So you can develop different products that go beyond what's available in nature and in a way meet some of the shortcomings of nature as well, right? So that means you will find our product in basically from top to toe, I always say. So you find it in accessories, you find it in jeans, you find it in shirts, in t-shirts, in underwear, in footwear. So a lot of companies are working with it. I would say if you look at a average European fashion oriented company, then you would probably find our fiber or man-made cellulosic fibers in maybe 10, 15, sometimes up to 20% of all products. Yeah. So if you check your labels and you find something that is viscose or modal or lyocell, yeah, those are the main fiber types within that cellulosic fiber family. Yeah. So you basically find it everywhere, and it's the great thing is you can adjust the properties so you have the right product for the right, or the right fiber for the right end product.
That makes sense. I guess what I would like to do now is talk a little bit about the current state of sustainable materials and fibers. I know that, you know, there's a lot of information out there and a lot of things, and it's a constantly fluid and changing situation. So it'd be really good to hear from your expert point of view, what is the current state for sustainable materials and fibers specifically today?
I think you have to look at it into different phases, I think. Yeah. My experience or the things that I've seen in the last couple of years is there was a phase, I would say up until the end of 2019, maybe beginning of 2020. So call it pre-pandemic. Yeah. Was a phase where you had a constant, relatively stable growth of interest into sustainable products. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would also encourage everyone, if you check Google Trends, or if you also check the edited data and look at timelines and so on, yeah, you see that trend relatively well. Constant growth, more and more brands looking into that. Yeah. And then you have the beginning of 2020. And the way we experienced that is there was suddenly nobody knew what's going on. Everybody remembers, right? Beginning or February, March 2020. And it was a bit of a question mark on the whole sustainability developments. Will it stop? Or will it accelerate? And we didn't know back then what's going to happen, but it accelerated in an extreme way. Yeah. So what you also see, and again, if you check Google Trends, you see that very clearly. Yeah. You have an enormous trend, beginning 2020, 2021, maybe peaking sometime end of 2021, beginning 22. Yeah. Where you have had a lot of or growing number of brands trying things out, exploring different opportunities within the sustainable textile field. And then that sort of almost peaked beginning of 2022. Yeah. And I think if you compare that to other industries, tech industry, for example, you have things like the Gartner hype cycle, right? Where you have an accelerated demand and for a new product, for a new technology, and you reach the peak. And then people find out it's really not that easy, right? So it's not easy to make a sustainable choice. Yeah. Because up until that point, people were trying to look for easy solution, replacing or upgrading a raw material with a better version of that raw material, replacing cotton with organic cotton or viscose with sustainable viscose. But it's not really a choice that affects the design of a product. Now you would have to do bigger things to think about the design and the structure and the composition of your products. And I think, you know, after that cycle, and if starting, you know, maybe 2022, mid of 22, people started to realize things are not that easy. You saw a lot of news around greenwashing, a lot of bad publicity, even for large brands that were confronted with, deceiving a bit their end consumers. Yeah. And what we see now in the industry is now a bit the realization starts that if you really want to make an impact, you have to do the hard work. You have to do the hard work. That's where we also see a lot of new regulation coming in, especially on the EU level. Yeah. Because things that worked until now are not going to work in the future. So there needs to be some fundamental change. So I think the phase that we are now entering is a phase where the real work starts and where the real real impact also on the environment and also the social environment will start.
Yeah, that is definitely something I want to ask you about, is the legislative change and how that's impacting retailers. But I guess before we get onto that, based on this kind of the concept of the real hard work now genuinely has to start, you can't greenwash as it has been kind of described and coined. You know, what is the feeling amongst retailers today about the path that they see ahead when it comes to sustainable fibers and materials and how they navigate that?
What we experience a bit, Grace, is that if you just think about the use of the term sustainable, right? It means a lot of things, but it usually means something different for a lot of people. And one thing that I do to check a bit the trend of this, and I've started that a couple of years ago, every year when Inditex publishes their annual report, I do a word search and I look for how often do you find terms related to sustainability in an annual report of a leading fashion conglomerate, right? So, and if you start looking at that year after year after year, now you see what's really trendy. Is it sustainability? Is it eco? Is it nature? Is it, you know, more social elements like diversity or other things? Yeah.
Interesting.
And that reflects a bit, I would say, the culture or the industry culture on a brand level. And there you do see some trend changes. Yeah. Because what we've experienced is that there is no great definition of sustainability. So companies start feeling uncomfortable using that term, especially also because there was bad publicity around that term. Yeah. So they try to be more precise in their language, and not only in the language, also in their sourcing behavior. Yeah. Then they're starting to be more precise in what are the requirements that they need? What audits do they have to make for their supply chain? How do they choose certain materials? How do they collect data on different materials and so on? So that's the sense that I get. It's getting more serious.
Yes.
We're going away from a pure communication effort to really fundamental effort that even impacts the design stage of retail products of garments.
Yeah, getting back to the fundamentals. Out of curiosity, when you did do your review of annual reports of retail conglomerates, what was your takeaway or finding from this year or last year, I guess?
So this year, so sustainability is the obvious term, right? And the way I do it is because you can look at the absolute number of times a certain term is mentioned in an annual report, but that's not giving you the full picture. What you have to do is compare it to how often does a very normal term like end or the appear in an annual report, because only then you get the relation, right? So how much does sustainability appear compared to any word in the normal word in the English language? Yeah. And what we've seen is also there a peak in the use of sustainability or sustainable, maybe in 2020, 2021. And now we have other terms not taking over, but at least growing faster, like words like transition or nature or also diversity as a general kind of more social term. Yeah. So you see also some trend changes there.
Interesting.
In the retail language.
So I guess more action orientated. So transitioning and actually taking, you know, making progress, but also to what you said earlier about being more precise and specific in the words that they're choosing.
Absolutely, absolutely, exactly, yeah.
And I know that you recently wrote a wonderful piece that was called The Textile Recycling Dilemma, Cutting Through the Hype. So what are the dilemmas that retailers are facing today in the current economy, cost of living crisis, when it comes to selecting materials generally, but with a focus on wanting to take action and be more sustainable generally?
It's almost a trilemma, yeah, not a dilemma, because very often it's a trade-off that you have to make as a brand. Yeah, it's about cost or the ideal. What is the ideal product? It's a product that is very sustainable, that performs really well as a great quality and is also cheap. Yeah. But the problem is that product just doesn't exist. There is no product like this. Yeah. So you have to make choices, and you have to make a choice. If you work with materials, if you are a brand, if you are a retailer, what choice do I make? Because you can only usually choose two out of three. Yeah. You can choose a product that is cheap and sustainable, probably won't be that good from a quality standpoint, right? You can choose a product that is good and cheap, but it won't be very sustainable. So you have to make a, you have to make a choice here. And the choice that we often see is the choice where you look for something that is cheap. Yeah. But that might not be the really right choice from a sustainability point of view. And that's the dilemma that many organizations, many brands, many retailers face. Yeah. Because obviously they are, or many of them, yeah, or the decision they need to make is, how do my choices when I choose materials influence my retail price realization, my margins, and so on and so forth. And many companies are very margin driven. Yeah. So cost is obviously an important element, and it's often a showstopper when it comes to sustainability. Yeah, because it's, especially in a market environment like this, in a very turbulent or not a great economic environment, often the choice goes to cost instead of sustainability. Yeah, it's quite funny because very often we are engaging a lot with the sustainability teams of brands and retailers, but they're not alone in their organization. They also have a controlling department, a finance department, and they, in a phase like this, they also start to review, why are you making this choice? What alternative choices do you have for raw materials? How will that impact the margin? So also the people within organizations that are very sustainability minded often have that internal pressure to deliver on cost and make certain choices that maybe are not going into the sustainability direction. So that's a very practical dilemma.
Yeah, I can imagine it's an extremely difficult time based on the pressures that retailers are facing, you know, from the economy in general and consumer spending and spending habits. I think one thing I would generally just top level like to understand is, why can't we have cheap, sustainable and good products?
I would say because a lot of them, I mean, you see a lot of new products out there, right? And it's generally a trend that we will see much more also in the future. You'll see much more variety of raw materials. There is not just, you know, cotton, polyester and viscose. That list will get longer and longer. There are a lot of innovative companies in that field, especially when you think about recycling or using recycled materials. So, but this, that the whole work that is needed to put something on a pilot scale, to develop new technologies, to invest R&D, to adapt products, to, you know, run trials, all of that is a process that takes years or often decades to do. And all of this needs to be funded. Yeah. And all of this has a cost attached to that. Yeah. And that cost is just cannot be eliminated. Yeah. But what we see, or my experience at least, is that cost doesn't have to be a showstopper. Yeah, because we see a lot of very cost conscious brands, especially also in the discount level. They have taken these choices. Many of them have made a decision, and it's very often a top leadership decision, that this is what we want. This is our minimum. So everything you show, dear suppliers, has to meet that minimum. And they are finding ways to do that. They're finding ways to engage with their supply chain, to have long-term agreements with them in place, to really give them also, you know, a direction and a commitment also that what the innovations they develop or the new materials that they work with, that they actually do this for a reason, and they have a stable customer. If they do that, in our experience, that really brings costs down. So very often it's a top management decision that is the driver of sustainability transition.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess it takes leaders in the marketplace to really take a stand, to kind of level up the entire industry. And I guess when it comes to leveling up or creating a level playing field, obviously a lot of people talk about the impact of legislation. So over the last few years, there's been a number of new legislative proposals across the globe that have been mentioned or have been presented. Could you talk to us about how that's also impacting retailers' decision-making and the actions that they're taking today?
Yeah, sure. So the market is focused a lot on, in the last couple of years, I would say, is the communication about sustainability to the end consumer. We've seen things like the Green Claim Directive or some work on that. We have seen different developments in different countries, especially in Europe. Yeah. Or also a lot of regulation around waste, around due diligence and so on and so forth. But all of them were about, you know, a bit about the fringe processes of the textile supply chain. They never touched the product itself or the design of the product itself. And I think there is where we will see most changes in the future. Yeah. There is called the ESPR, Eco Design for Sustainable Products regulation, that is now under development on an EU level. And that is really touching the core of the product development. Yeah. So here you talk about things like product durability, reusability, resource efficiency, yeah? Recycled content, carbon footprint, and so on and so forth. Yeah. So you really touch the design process of a garment. Yeah. And the easy choices that you were able to take up until now, and replacing a conventional material with a little bit more sustainable material, those things will not be available in the future.
And how is that impacting how retailers are interacting with businesses like yourself and the sentiment that they're sharing?
So there's a lot of unclarity around those regulations. There is no regulation yet. There are consultations happening, policy development, a lot of lobbying happening from different sides. Yeah, so I would say the most prepared brands and retailers are the ones that are trying out a lot of different things, collaborating with many different materials, many different organizations. They are usually also the ones that make their choices of fabric mills, for example, very wisely. Yeah, so that means what I mean with it is that even if they don't source, for example, a recycled product right now, they still work with suppliers that are doing developments and trying out new things in that space, because they know that once the regulations are there, those suppliers have already made their experiences. They're already knowledgeable in working with different materials. They're already knowledgeable in meeting quality standards and so on and so forth. Yeah. So this is, I would say, how it impacts them now. But everybody's waiting and kind of seeing and trying to influence what's going to be the exact definitions. Yeah, in those regulations. So we will see.
Yes. There is a lot going on and a lot of change, but also some really positive change, and also really positive based on the work, all the hard work that you're doing at Lensing. And I know that customer centricity is something that we're extremely passionate about here at Edited, and understanding what is it that your customers really want and how can you best serve their needs. What is the feeling amongst consumers? Obviously, opinions have changed over time. What dilemmas are they facing, and what have you learned?
For Lensing, it was also a bit of a development, I would say. Historically, we also, nothing was really about sustainability. If you think 10 years back, it was about the functionality of the product, really performance aspect of the product. Nobody was asking around sustainability, even though we've been a sustainable company for a very long time. Yeah, but nobody was talking about this. Yeah, and then kind of we developed this thought that, oh, anyway, every one of us is a consumer, right? We know what consumers want. We don't have to ask anyone. But what we did then a while back is we did a very large scale consumer study. Yeah. So what we did is we went out to 4 markets. We went to the UK, to the US, to Germany, and also to Spain. And we actually asked consumers. We set up focus groups to discuss with them, show them the products, ask them about how do they buy materials? What are they looking for? What do they know about materials? What do they know about sustainability, and so on and so forth? And then following that, we did quantitative survey over 6,000 consumers in those markets that we interviewed. And we took those conclusions and tried to build up an understanding, what do consumers really know and what do they want to know? And the result of that is they know very little. Yeah, they know very little. They simplify things, obviously. I shouldn't even say they. Yeah, it's we. Every one of us is doing that, right? So you have a feeling what cotton is, right? You know what linen is. You have a feeling for different raw materials, but you don't really know anything about the impact, apart from the textile world is bad and we are polluting so much and we are creating so much waste, but you don't really know the specifics. Yeah. So that's kind of one of the outcomes here. Yeah. And what we did, kind of, we tried to group those customers or end consumers into different groups or fields. So what we did is we looked at 2 axes. One was, do people care about sustainability or do they not care about sustainability? So those were 2 opposing sides here. And then we also looked or checked, do they care about style or do they care about comfort? Also 2 opposing views. Yeah. And if you have those 2 axes, you can try to group your consumers into where do they belong? Are there certain groups? Are there certain people that care a lot about the environment, but also care a lot about fashion trends, for example? Yeah. So what we did is group those customers into different groups and then defined what is the group among all of those consumers, what are the ones that are most influential that we really need to speak to, that we really need to engage with. And also, what are the brands? What are the retailers they are buying from? What are the brands that they trust? Right. And that creates kind of that target group of brands, of retailers, of consumers, of media also that you need to work with to influence the entire market. And our job is really to educate, the market. So we need to find the perfect target group in a way to do that.
And what was, out of curiosity, what was your findings and takeaway from that huge quantitative and qualitative study that you conducted?
So one of the things, for example, are that consumers, they care a lot about sustainability, but they tend to focus on action or on areas that are close to home. So if you think of yourself, right, you are maybe sorting your different waste categories, right? Or you're trying not to throw away, stuff on, within your neighborhood or something like that. So you focus on things that are close to home where you can actually see the impact. That's quite a problem for the fashion industry because very little is happening close to us, right? And what they also focus on, they are focusing on areas where their needs are not compromised, right? They want to do something good, but they don't want to suffer for that, right? So they want to do something good where, if you think of the fashion area, they want to do something good, but of course the style needs to be right and the fit needs to be right. They're not taking any compromises there, right? So that's another thing we found out, And of course, they need easy action. They don't read, they don't spend a lot of time of informing themselves. They need heuristics, they need simple action. Those are the things that we found out. That's also, if you think of your friends, your surroundings, that's also what you really see, right? So for example, you are simplifying by choosing the brand that you buy from. You get the feeling they are sustainable. So you buy from them. You don't care about the details in the product, right? So you trust them. Or you choose a product that is higher priced, right? As a proxy for quality. And quality often is also used as a proxy for sustainability, because if you have a product that you can use long, it's really very sustainable, right? So those are some things that we find out. But the hard work for us, or not only for us, for any raw material company, is we're not really communicating to the end consumer. We are only communicating through brands, through retailers. They do the hard work of explaining. We're giving them some tools, but the real communication and engagement, followership is coming from them. So how do you transport the good things that you do as a raw material producer to the end consumer who doesn't know much about that raw material, right? So you really have to get the story right, and kind of in an instantly they have to get it. A lot of the knowledge we gained from that research is how to communicate to the end consumer. What do they want? What do they like? What do they hate? How do they want to communicate it? How do they want to be communicated with? Those are the things that we find out, and we are already executing that together with a lot of our partners. When they're asking for us, okay, now I have this great product, how do I communicate that properly? Then we can give them sound advice. That is not just our feeling, but it's what we actually see on the consumer level.
And using data to back up those recommendations.
Exactly.
So would you be able to give us some insight into the types of recommendations that you have provided in how brands and retailers can confidently and most successfully articulate their sustainability credentials or their mission?
I would say also around that kind of general term, sustainability, right? So people are getting more and more cautious about that term, right? And with people, I mean really end consumers, right? So being very generic is not helping. You need to not only prove with data. People also don't care about data, frankly. The consumer doesn't care so much about data. They're not going to do their calculations of CO2 footprint or anything like that. They need, I think, the story behind. So they need the story behind the product. That's what they always need. And what we've been doing recently, for example, we work together with the BBC. We work together with Le Monde News in France. We've worked together with German kids television, for example, where we really showed the background, how is it made behind the scenes and so on and so forth. And that's what usually consumers want. They want to know what's going on behind the curtains. They need labels. They need facts. They need figures to build their trust, but it's not enough. I think we are beyond that. We need more about how is it made? Where does it come from?
Sure. Demonstration of that. And I guess, practically speaking, what does that look like for a retailer? How can they do that?
maybe how does the communication on an end product level work, right? So usually it works with hang tags, with kind of product descriptions, or if you buy in an online shop, you have a lot of descriptions there, right? So it's usually giving them information, sending them, giving them the feeling that they're actually doing something and here's the story. Very often it's also helpful to have that proof of a third party company such as Lansing, yeah, because it's not just we, the brand, saying that, it's actually a really well-known company behind that who publishes all of their data, who has a very, very kind of large sustainability report for a very long time, who are very open and transparent about what they do. Yeah, so this is very helpful. Yeah, but we are also doing what we call co-branding campaigns, where we actually sit together with a brand, with a retailer, to think about, okay, this is the consumer group we want to target. This is our, the consumer that is usually buying from us. And then we sit together and develop marketing campaigns around a certain product or around a certain, launch and so on and so forth. So the practical, or I think the most practical thing for that we've experienced is that actually sitting together with the brand, thinking about who are their consumers, match them with our experience, with our research that we did, and develop a communication plan that actually works for the end consumer, and then also get the data, understand how did that campaign perform, what was the impact before, after the campaign, and so on and so forth. So it's a lot about understanding, getting a feeling for, and putting the data behind the actions and the campaigns. So that's how we usually do it.
Mm-hmm. And one piece I would love to kind of get your point of view on is, are consumers willing to pay for sustainable materials and products? Because there's a lot of noise, a lot of reports in the news that, based on the cost of living crisis, that they aren't, that they're prioritizing affordability over shopping sustainably. Could you kind of shed some light on that?
I think they are. So it's a bit of a hard question. Yeah. So I think they aren't. They aren't willing to pay for sustainability as such. They are willing to pay for a combination of different factors. They are willing to pay for quality. They are willing to pay for a trustworthy brand. They are willing to pay for a brand that gives them transparency on where the products come from, but they are not specifically paying more for a sustainable product. Yeah, because I think of that, the fact that sustainability is a very broad term. Yeah. But what they want increasingly want is that exact transparency. Yeah. Where does the product come from? Can I trust the brand that I'm buying from? How are media reporting about that brand? What are they actually doing? And so on and so forth. Yeah. So, and it's a lot about trust building to end consumers.
So interestingly, it's the trust building at the brand level, not at the product item level. So, we have a lot of retailers, we can see from our own data, they'll have an organic cotton tee or they'll have just a regular cotton tee. They're not willing to pay 90% more for said product, because it ultimately comes back to, are they willing to invest in that brand in totality? Is that correct in my understanding?
Yeah, that's correct. And I think one thing that the consumer generally doesn't know is what is actually the, if you think about the fiber, yeah, what is the fiber's contribution to the cost of a final garment, right? And it depends a bit on what product it is, but usually the fiber value itself in a product can be 2%, 3% of a retail price of a garment, right? So it's really a fraction. So even if you were, as a retailer, to say that, I want a better product, I'm ready to pay a premium for that raw material, yeah, it's usually less than 1% of the retail price of a garment. So if you manage your supply chain very well, if you create transparency also with your suppliers as a brand, it's possible to have a significant uplift in footprint, or a significantly better environmental footprint, with a manageable additional cost. Yeah, that's what we experience. So being sustainable doesn't have to be much more expensive. You don't need the consumer to pay 10% or 20% more for a sustainable product. It doesn't cost that much more. Yeah, if you really manage your supply chain really well and know where things are coming from, and yeah.
So ultimately, if we're going to pivot the conversation to moving forward and taking action, which is something we're hearing about a lot, is what are the practical steps that retailers can really put in place?
few recommendations maybe, or a few things that can be done. And I think the most probably fundamental one is don't go for the minimal solution. The minimal solution, meaning, you know, you replace virgin polyester with recycled polyester or something like that, it's not going to work. It's not going to work in the long run. Yeah, it might be something to show some progress or communicate some progress, but it's not going to work in the long run. Yeah, and I think one recent example from a completely different industry was the Lego company. I'm not sure if you followed that, yeah, but they are working with a plastic product. That's their product, right? They're working with bricks. And they have done a lot of work, I think, on thinking about how can I change that material? How can I make that material more sustainable? Yeah, and recently they basically came out and say they failed. They couldn't do it. They couldn't reach what they were looking for because they need quality in the product. That's what consumers expect from them, right? So it's hard if you're depending so much on a material that has some environmental issues. It's hard to change that if it significantly impacts your quality. Yeah. So I would say it's important to look at the big picture and not go for the minimal solution, not try to replace one thing with the other thing, but really look fundamentally into the design process of a product. Yeah. What are each of the steps going into a final product, going into a garment? And that often means what materials are you blending? What finishings are you having? What dyes are you having on those products? How are they cut and sewn? How is the pattern making process? What waste are you creating? Where does that waste go? And I think basically if you bring a new product to market right now, you would almost have to imagine the entire lifespan of this product. Where is it going? How is it being used? How is it getting discarded? And what does that mean for the environment? Yeah. And basically have a design process that thinks about the end of life. I think that's something that a lot of retailers are already doing. Yeah. Design for circularity is what many companies call it. Yeah. So this is, I think, a very practical step. Because it's not about the products you put onto market in 5 years from now when the regulations are there. It's really about the products you put to market right now. Yeah. And then another thing is to really choose your suppliers very wisely. Yeah. A lot of the developments that we see, for example, are happening close to Europe, in Portugal, in Spain, in Italy, in Turkey. There you have a lot of innovative suppliers who need that innovation because they will never be a bulk supplier. They will never be a commodity supplier. They have to develop new things on a daily basis, right? So a lot of the design developments, circularity developments, recycling and so on is actually happening there. Yeah. So I would also recommend everyone to have a look into the non-classic or more nearshoring supply chains, because there it's extremely innovative when it comes to new materials. Yeah. And another thing is really corporate leadership, I would say. Yeah. We've seen the most cost sensitive retailers being able to become more sustainable, but we've also seen the most premium suppliers failing to do so. So it's not necessarily about cost. Yeah. It's about making a decision and then orientating the entire sourcing process to that decision. And in reality, it's not such a big deal. It can be done.
Yeah. A change management at a kind of corporate cultural level as well. Is it something that they truly believe in?
Exactly. Yeah. Also thinking about incentives, right? We talk about brands like some abstract, kind of hard to define concept, right? But it's people behind the scenes, right? It's people making a decision. It's somebody in the product development department making a decision, someone in sourcing making a decision. And they are people, so they are driven by what they are asked to do and what they are incentivized by, what bonuses they get and so on and so forth, right? So I think that's a great way to start. And we see some organizations do that, yeah, where you say, okay, it's going to be a bit more costly. Maybe the margin suffers a bit. So I get kind of a minus point for that, but it's a really sustainable material, and that outweighs the negative impact in my goal achievement, right? So if you really tell people, I want to be sustainable, and if you're more sustainable, you'll do great at this company, then they take action.
And I guess if you're truly understanding what your customers want, that's ultimately going to impact your bottom line and your business performance in general.
Absolutely, yeah.
I guess, do you have any specific examples of brands that you've worked with and stories that you can tell for our listeners?
Yeah, sure. So we have, we are, the main activities that we have are in the US and also in Europe and across different markets. So we've recently, for example, had a great collaboration together with US-based brand called Reformation. Yeah, so if the listeners want to check that out, yeah, they are great at communicating about their product. They have fantastic materials. They are super transparent about what they do. Yeah, so I can only recommend that. They are also one of the companies who managed to implement a lot of non-classic or a lot of man-made cellulosic fibers into their products, and their consumers, their buyers, they love it. Yeah, so it's great. They do a great job in terms of material development, communication, and so on and so forth. So that's I think a good example. But we also have large brands like Levi's, for example. They've been working with our lyocell fiber for a long time. Yeah, so you will find that in a lot of their products, and they've been very consistent doing that over time. And they also, if you think about the Levi's jeans, sometimes you buy them over and over again, right? So it's not just kind of a collection or a seasonal thing. You have that for a very long period, and it shows also the trust that the end consumer has in a certain product. Yeah, or if you look at in Europe, for example, we had collaboration with Marco Polo recently. Yeah, so also they do a lot of, they're very behind their sustainability strategies. They are very progressive also in what they are doing. So there are great examples out there in the market. You can also check out our tencel.com website. We show a lot of the collaborations that we are having with our partners there. There are a lot of hundreds of examples.
Oh, amazing. And Johannes, again, I guess just to kind of finalize, I know we've spoken a lot about the importance of data in really understanding the kind of the current market, the environment in which retailers are navigating. We know it is ever changing and it is extremely difficult out there. Could you share for our listeners a little bit about how important that is to you and the way that you use data to inform and educate and inspire retailers?
Yeah, for sure. So if you think again of our company, we are very simple, really. Yeah, we make a very simple product, repeatable product. It's the same all the time. Yeah, but if you think of the variety that product creates, that's getting really complex, right? So for example, if you think of one fiber, it might go to hundreds of direct customers who are making a yarn out of it, but they would then in turn sell it to thousands of different fabric mills, you know, making tens of thousands of different materials or fabrics with it. And that's going into, you know, potentially hundreds of thousands of different retail products, right? So how do you simplify that? How do you actually make that workable, right? And I think that's when data comes in. So you need to understand what's going on a retail level. How are different materials used? Who is using them? Who is using them more than they did in the past? Who is using them less than they did in the past? What are the categories that your materials are used, and how is that changing over time, and so on and so forth? So to understand that, we use a lot of data. We use a variety of different sources to understand really how are our materials used in the market. And that allows us to be more relevant partners to the brands and retailers out there, because we understand their portfolios, we understand where they're going, we understand where they're coming from, yeah, and we can tie into their strategies and really help them achieve their product goals, their sustainability goals. But it's, we're not a data-driven company as such, and that's, I think, where you see a lot of change happening. Yeah, if I go to my team and give them a long Excel sheet, they would hate me for that. They couldn't care less, right? So nobody is kind of engaged by a large table of data. They are annoyed the moment you show it to them, right? So it's often not about just bringing data to the people. Very often that is without consequences, yeah? But you have to bring people to the data. Yeah? You have to make it relevant for them. You need to show them the value of the data, and you need to find a smart way of blending gut feeling and data together, because relying on data alone, I think, would never work in an industry like ours. It's about relation, it's about people, it's about emotion. So you cannot replace gut feeling with data. Yeah, you have to blend them together in a smart way. I think that's our successes that we had so far were based on that.
I guess that's the beauty of our industry, right? It's being able to balance the left and right sides of our brains and the creative with the analytical elements. So thank you for sharing that. And Johannes, I guess to wrap things up, what is the one thing that you would love our listeners to take away from this episode?
Gracie asking me a very tough thing. Yeah, I would say be open, try out a lot of things. There's not going to be kind of this one solution in, it will never going to be like this in the material world. Try out different things and find people you trust within the organizations. Look for data always. Yeah. And look for confirmation, look for certifications and so on and so forth. But it's not enough. Build trust to the companies that you work with, whether this is a supplier or a raw material producer. First and foremost, you need to trust them. Yeah, so you need the data, but data is not replacing trust.
I feel like trust has been a common theme and a common thread throughout this whole conversation. Yes, Johannes, thank you so much for joining us. It's been extremely insightful and wonderful to hear about all of the work that you and your team are doing at Lenzing across our industry. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed the discussion. Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to Inside Retail with me, Grace Hill. For more insights, head to our resources section on edited.com and follow the podcast so you don't miss an episode.